Hello everyone, welcome to my channel Journey and Beyond. This is Shefali and today we have Dr. Sonu Bhaskar with us. Dr. Sonu is an internationally recognized neurologist and physician scientist specializing in vascular neurology. He has over 125 peer-reviewed publications ranking in the top 2-3% of most cited research in neurology. Dr. Bhaskar has delivered over 100 invited talks and he is currently a founding director of the Global Health Neurology Lab and the world's first New South Wales Brain Clot Bank in Sydney. He leads a multidisciplinary team of over 35 professionals in global health research, currently on sabbatical as visiting director at the National Cerebral and Cardiovascular Center in Osaka, Japan. Hello, Dr. Sonu. How are you? Welcome to my channel, Journey and Beyond. How is Japan treating you?
Thank you, Shefali. It's wonderful. Thank you for this. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you today. And thank you for the invitation. Japan is beautiful. I'm absolutely enjoying my stay here. It's been wonderful. Learning, but also a wonderful experience of collaboration about learning a new culture and the people. It's just wonderful. And hopefully, you know, this my time here in Japan will set up new collaborations between Australia, India, and Japan, which will be really fantastic.
So, you wear multiple hats. You're a physician, entrepreneur, board director. How do you balance these diverse responsibilities and what motivates you to keep pushing forward?
Thanks, Shefali. I think it's all about having a purpose in life. And, you know, I don't see as different hats altogether. I see that they all serve a common purpose. And my purpose has always been to see how we can serve our patients, serve our community. And how do we create innovations so that, you know, the access to the cutting-edge diagnostics, cutting-edge treatment is available to our patients in Australia, in India, in Japan, around the world. So I think, you know, sometimes I must be honest with you, it can be challenging. And at times you really have to navigate different boundaries of emotional turmoil as well, because you know, encountering difficult challenges with patients and their life stories can be very personally challenging. But I think at the end of the day, you also draw inspiration from them. You know, that despite the challenges that individuals face, we have an extraordinary ability to bounce back. And for me as a physician, it's always about be the person standing next to my patient and be a co-traveler in his journey and seeing how we can alleviate suffering, alleviate the pain, alleviate the quality of life of our patients. So it's all about, you know, small but tangible victories, and celebrating those victories are important. So rather than becoming overwhelmed by number of hats, I think we should really be, personally me, I try to celebrate small things, whether it's a grand success of a grant application or it's one patient that we treated and it miraculously, you know, transformed over time. These are little joys, but it gives you a purpose. And remember the bigger purpose. It all serves that bigger purpose. I call it the mango, the big mango, and these little pieces serves that bigger mango, the bigger, it's your purpose.
Nice. Incredible. You sound like a doctor, you know. Can you share some key moments in your journey from medical school to becoming a globally recognized neurologist and entrepreneur?
Oh, that's a lot of journey, but maybe I can share that, you know, at a very young age, when I was a child, I lost my maternal grandfather. He died after cardiac surgery, presumably because he endured sepsis and he had a cardiac arrest. And I was very close to my grandfather. It's actually both the grandfather. And that loss was had a huge impact in my life. And what it reminded me is that despite, you know, advances in medicine, there are two things that ails our world. One is that we still don't know how best to treat our patients with brain and cardiac disorders. And second, there's a huge disparity of access and treatment. So not all patients who have the cardiac arrest gets the same treatment. And I think that episode in my life really became an inspiration for me to pursue medicine. And during my medicine, you know, medicine took me many places. I went from India to Spain to Netherlands to Germany to Australia and now in Japan. What life has taught me is this, that there are the differences between systems, but no systems are perfect. And by learning from each other, by learning from systems, we can really improve our systems. So I'm a big believer of understanding and learning from each other and looking at our capabilities and see what we can learn and sometimes unlearn. And lastly, with regards to one important moment in my life was the foundation of Brain Clot Bank, which I started actually also with a patient who came with a debilitating stroke. And we did not know what was the cause or mechanism of that stroke. That became the crucial point, the pain point in my life. And I was so inspired that, you know, we need to find a cause. And we went about, you know, investigating the etiology or mechanism of this particular patient, and then went on to see that there was a value in looking at clots and seeing how that can inform our diagnostics and treatment decision-making in stroke patients. So I'm a stroke physician, and that was, I think, as somebody who is passionate and driven by innovation and care, the Brain Clot Bank initiative was quite an important milestone in my life. And I'm so glad that today that the wings that started in Sydney in Australia have gone overseas and we are growing bigger every day.
That's super cool. You should be super proud of yourself, Sonu. That's such an inspiring story, how from your maternal grandparents, you know, you were inspired to become physician. So I'm moving to my next question. What are some of the biggest challenges you have faced in leadership roles, and how have you overcome them?
You know, I truly believe in this mantra that as a leader, we should be the one who are providing platforms for the next generation to come forward. As a physician, our job is to be an educator, teacher. As a mentor, we should be creating next generation of innovators. And at an early stage of my life, when I started my new team, there was a significant cut in the funding, and I had to let go. I did not have resources to keep a member of my team. And I still remember that day was one of the most difficult days in my life, because I've always thrived on, you know, building things. It was so difficult to lose that member in my life. I apologized to that member, but at that moment, I told myself, this is also an opportunity to go beyond the conventional routes. So I looked beyond and started new collaboration, reached out, cutting across industries, and brought people together. And it is a fulfilling moment today that from a moment where there was a moment of sadness, of grief, of hopelessness, today we are 35 people strong, so that tree has grown bigger and we look after each other. I think that is something which, you know, probably is a story which hopefully will echo with you and others.
Definitely. So as someone who has worked across continents, you have lived in Europe, Australia, India, now in Japan. How do you see global collaboration in healthcare evolving, and what role do you envision for AI and big data in shaping its future?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, that, you know, we are at a very important times in our life, because we are sitting at our generation is sitting at a time where we are seeing an absolute exponential growth of technology, you know, in terms of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and the translation of these technologies to solve complex issues. But doing that, it's not possible to do it alone. I think we need to look beyond our borders, our little teams, to see how we can work together with others to find solutions together rather than in isolation. And I think that's where it's at the crux of collaboration. Collaboration is key when we want to solve complex issues with global health, with brain conditions, with heart conditions, because many of these challenges cannot be fixed with a one-size-fits-all, fits-nothing. And I think that's the reason that artificial intelligence, for it to have a transformative role, we need to be working together with our partners and collaborators in the developing countries, in the developed countries, in Asia, in Latin America, in Europe and Americas, to see that our data sets, our purpose are shared, that we pull together resources from various populations and demographies so that we can be more appropriate and sensitive to the purpose that we are coming in. So AI, I truly believe it's going to be a game-changing platform to transform how we're going to treat patients in the future. And, you know, the World Health Organization often talks about universal healthcare. And I think we are now hitting that jackpot with AI. AI can make healthcare truly accessible and truly universal.
Nice. So as director of New South Wales Brain Cloud Bank, what inspired you to start this groundbreaking initiative? And what challenges did you face in bringing it to life?
I think the starting point was, again, the patient was about a pain point in medicine that we could not find, despite extensive treatment, extensive diagnostic workup. We were not able to find an etiology or mechanism of a patient with stroke. Now, there is a certain subgroup of stroke patients that are called cryptogenic stroke, which means we do not know the cause or mechanism of the stroke. And it's a huge problem. It's about 30 to 40% of all stroke patients. And that really touched me as a physician, that why can't we answer this question? And that led me to see how we can explore this, leveraging our clinical expertise and scientific innovation. And that's how the Brain Cloud Bank was born. Now, with regards to the purpose behind this, was that I really wanted at the outset that the resource that we create should be a global commodity, one that can be shared by our stakeholders around the world. And that was at the purpose of how this initiative came into being. And we reached out across our centers, across our hospitals, reached out to other hospitals to see if we can bring them together to join and be a partner in this initiative. And it was wonderful that many centers were able to be part of this movement, and it became what it became.
Yeah, right. What do you think are the most promising innovations in medtech and health startups, especially, say, in the context of neurology?
I think the next couple of decades, the place where the next generation medtechs should be looking at is early detection, early prevention. So that's in a space where we can really capitalize, rather than going much downstream, looking at, you know, how we can capture early symptoms, early, the prodromal phase of the diseases before they actually become more morbid. And by doing that, we can have a huge population level benefits to our patients and our community. So I think the next generation medtechs will be looking at early diagnosis, early screening, you know, the blood-based screening programs, to using AI platforms to, you know, identify these patients early and manage their treatment course over time. So these are some of the things that can be done. We recently published in one of the most oldest journals in the world, Annals of New York Academy of Sciences, a couple of days ago. And I would encourage everybody to have a read at that paper, where we put forward a new comprehensive management and treatment and diagnostic plan using AI for atrial fibrillation patients. Now, atrial fibrillation patients are a subgroup of cerebrovascular disorders, which are hugely challenging. They're very difficult to diagnose. And I think that artificial intelligence has a huge role to play in deploying them across centers to see if we can capture these patients earlier and help them from getting worse, because these patients are most likely to be at a high risk of stroke or a heart attack. And by leveraging our artificial intelligence, we can seriously help these patients from getting worse.
I'll move to my next question. What advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs who want to work at the intersection of healthcare and technology?
Thank you for that question. I'll just have like three advice which I can give to, you know, fellow travelers in the field, or, you know, who are aspiring to be entrepreneurs, whether you're a doctor or engineer or somebody who comes from the humanities side, or you're venturing out into a new field. This is what I will suggest. Find your pain point, and you should be passionate enough to stick with your pain point for a long time. Because often startups, entrepreneurs find it very challenging to sustain the momentum. And that's why sticking by it over time helps you build that, you know, that the spirit that you started with. And maybe sometimes it's about also moving from one to another, seeing how you can innovate your idea of entrepreneurship altogether. And your every time you fail, take it as a mission to discover something new, find a new solution, find a new pain point. And I think that journey will tell you and teach you to be a better entrepreneur. And we all learn in that journey. The second thing I want to share with you is that please don't do it alone. Work together, be a part of a team, build teams, and bring people who necessarily doesn't agree with you. They come from different disciplines, who are coming from, if you're a doctor, bring somebody from an engineering perspective, somebody who doesn't think alike. And that multidisciplinary approach is critical to solve complex challenges. Lastly, my last advice would be that be patient with yourself and your idea. Because sometimes we get grappled and overwhelmed with so many pressures in life, and with technology and with innovation. And it's not a rosy world altogether. It's a world which is full of thorns. But I think being patient and being kind to yourself and your team gives you the resilience to stay through and stay true to yourself. So don't forget that you still need a break for yourself to enjoy a coffee, travel around the world, and still be an entrepreneur. But you can do that only if you're kind to yourself and you're patient with your idea. So these are a few advice or a few suggestions, if I make.
Thank you for that. So you have achieved so much in your career. What personal or professional setbacks have shaped your path, and how did you navigate them?
I think, you know, in terms of the setbacks, one of the earliest setbacks, you know, was growing up, we had, you know, about the lack of resources, opportunities. So you had to create opportunities for you when you have limited resources. So I think that was important to that, you know, that I call it the curiosity mindset, to be curious. And the hunger for curiosity is important. You could be passionate enough that this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And I think that curiosity is the driver of what makes you move forward even if sometimes you'll have to, you know, take five steps back before you take one step forward. So that's important. The second thing was, you know, like I endured a lot of sometimes rejections. And every time I got rejected, I took that printout, put it in front of my desk, and I reminded myself, this is the most beautiful letter, actually more important than the success. Because that rejection was my inspiration to innovate in a radically different way, find new ways to tackle the same problem. I'm not going to give up on the problem. I'm going to tackle the same problem in a completely new way. And collaboration was key in those moments, reaching out, seeking mentorship, seeking collaborations with people who your values match. And you find so many other co-travelers in your life that this journey will become so worthwhile and fruitful if you persevere and be passionate enough to sustain with your idea.
Right. Sonu, you just mentioned about mentorship. Are there any mentors who have significantly influenced your career or leadership style?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, there are some personal favorites and there are some like ideological favorites of mine. My personal favorite is my grandfather, my late grandfather, who is no longer, because my spiritual journey was because the teachings he had for me. We traveled across Himalayas multiple times, and he taught a lot about life that I'm very much grateful to. And of course, my parents. But in terms of my professional, you know, journey, and there are few individuals who have remarkably shaped my career and future. One of them is Santiago Ramani Cajal. Cajal was the first Nobel Prize in medicine, and actually from Spain. He was a Spanish neurologist and a neuroscientist. And what was interesting about Cajal was that he was ridiculed by his peers at that time, but he did not give up on the idea. He started with a makeshift laboratory at his home and built up with this one of the most game-changing, you know, the neuronal connection, that how neurons talk to each other. So Cajal and Golgi shared the Nobel Prize in the same year because of the extraordinary work that Cajal did. My second favorite is Tagore. There's a book that I would recommend of Tagore. It's called The Post Office. And this is about a boy who is bedridden, is suffering from an incurable disease. He doesn't have his parents. He's living in somebody else's home who has adopted him. It's one of his family members or something. But his hope that one day something miraculous will happen is that hope that I think I carry in my heart every day. So Tagore had a huge influence in my life. So a big shout out to Tagore's book, Post Office. Nice. The third person that I'm very, inspired by is Rambam. Rambam was a Jewish theologian and a philosopher, also a doctor, who in his times wrote multiple books on philosophy, on theology and ethics. And I often quote him because sometimes I speak about ethics in medicine, on the need for ethical informed artificial intelligence and equity informed artificial intelligence. And I draw some of the messages that Rambam gave us in his book. So one of his book, the Complex Mind, it's one of the compelling reads that you could read. So Rambam is one of my personal favorite. Lastly, as somebody who also was one of the recipients of the Marie Curie Fellowship, I've always been fascinated by Marie Curie, who was the first Nobel laureate, woman Nobel laureate, who won two Nobel Prizes in her life, and her contributions, and at the face of adversity, something which really inspires me. So these are some of my personal and professional favorites.
Wow. Thank you so much for that, Sonu. You have lived in so many countries. You have lived in Europe, Japan, Australia, India. But as an immigrant to Australia, when you moved to Australia, what challenges did you face in establishing yourself? And how did you adapt to a new professional and a cultural environment?
So it's a great question. So, you know, whenever you are an immigrant to a new country, you have to navigate not just being unfamiliar in a completely unfamiliar environment, but also you don't have many friends and colleagues. So you actually start from scratch. But I think that is also an asset, you know, and that asset is to reframe your idea, reframe your purpose, and take that as a challenge and see that how do you leverage your background to bring into this new perspective. So I always thought that, you know, even though I'm an outsider, but my insights as a global, you know, having worked and learned in different places, maybe that would bring new ideas. So rather than being somebody who is a status quoist, my recommendation is that bring innovation right from the time you are as an immigrant. Bring your ideas and be proud of it, because your background, your experiences make you more wiser, make you more important and more celebrated. You're different, and that's your USP. You're special because you have that wealth of experience coming from that, you know, diverse settings. And that innovation of experience, that innovation of the knowledge that you have, that you bring, makes the workplace, your workplace, even more vibrant. So I think my humble suggestion to everybody who's listening to your podcast today would be to be proud of themselves, but also be humble about learning, sharing, and make this journey worthwhile. Be patient. And hopefully that would make your experience as an immigrant something to be celebrated.
Wow. Thank you so much. That's such a good response. My last question is, what advice would you give to other immigrant fellows who are trying to break into their industries or trying to have a new startup or, you know, trying to do something good, innovative in a new country like Australia or Japan or Europe or India or anywhere else in the world?
I'm just going to give three recipes, which I hope, you know, will strike chords with everybody who's listening today. The first one is that you are unique and you are special. Remember that. Tell yourself every day that your uniqueness and your diversity of experience makes you quintessentially different from everybody else. But bring that passion and that strength of diversity in your work every day. Because remember, the diversity of thought is that one makes innovation sustainable. One that makes innovation different and unique. You are that diversity of thought. You are that spark that brings the diversity of thought into real world experience. So be proud of your unique experiences. The second thing I want to share is this. Sometimes I often see that, you know, we are daunted by lack of opportunities. But this is also a moment to network beyond, build networks. Imagine this, that if you are like in a small pool, and if you're holding on to others, what a community of strength that you will build over time. You start with one person, and the other person holds you on to somebody else, and you create a network, a chain of people who will become your community. Remind yourself every day that you are that, maybe you're the one person who's going to start that community, but your community over time will become your strength. So believe in that community that you're going to build over time. Lastly, never give up on your goals. You know, the beauty of a migrant is that we come with a little backpack. That little backpack, you know, people can ridicule at times, but that is your strength. Because you're willing to venture beyond your comfort zones to innovate, to think beyond, which many people don't do. So I would urge you, I implore you to be passionate about your idea. Hold on to it. Innovate. Innovate the innovation. And keep on till the time you succeed. Take every failure as a stepping stone to something bigger. And the day will come when your community that you have built, remember the pool that I was talking about, the community that you have built will become the strength that initially was your weakness. And you transform every experience that you bring as a migrant, your diversity of thought, into something so beautiful that you become a story that everybody can celebrate, including you yourself.
Wow, such a great advice. Thank you so much for the answers, Sonu. I'm going to have a rapid fire question round with you, and whatever comes to your mind first, you just have to say it, okay?
Yes.
What is the best advice you have ever received?
The best advice that I ever received was be patient and be kind to yourself and to others.
Nice. What's one gadget you can't live without?
My phone.
What's your go-to productivity hack?
The go-to productivity hack is that, make a plan a day before and block your time.
Nice.
And that will work.
Yeah. Who is your inspiration?
My inspiration is my grandfather, who I often talk about. And I've also been very inspired by the work of Kahal, who is an extraordinary physician and an innovator and scientist.
Nice. What motivates you?
My motivation is hunger for service. Hunger every day, to get up every day, to find a new purpose. And the purpose is to serve our patients, to get them walk out of the hospital with a smile in their heart. And that makes me so happy. Whether it's about innovation, but making our patients and service and serving our patients and community, is that what makes me so passionate every day? It gives me a purpose every day.
Wow, nice. What's your favorite way to unwind after a long day?
My favorite ways, I love reading and I love listening to music. So I love Rabindra Sangeet and Sephardic music. So I listen to music and I read books. That's something which I absolutely enjoy.
Well, my last question is, if you went a neurologist, what career would you choose?
I'll be a cafe owner on the top of the Himalayas or mountains, and I will write. So in the daytime, I will serve tea and coffee to people because I love coffee. And in the evening, I will write because I love writing.
Nice. Thank you so much for jumping on a podcast with me. Yeah, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Shefali. It was wonderful being here with you. And I absolutely appreciate you having